Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello, and welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast. Welcome along. It's Rob Riles welcoming you to another edition. Now, in today's program, I'm real pleased to be able to bring you somebody that I know is going to add some value to our knowledge base and is certainly going to be really interesting to chat to. Now, I can't say I've known this gentleman for a long time, but we certainly hit it off when we had a conversation, and I credit Joe with that for reaching out to me. Now, the person I'm talking to is called Joe Davis, and Joe is a chartered psychologist. He's going to put me right on anything I do get wrong. I know that he works in a business field at the moment, but he's also has interests in sports, esports. He was educated at Stirling University, one of the eminent places to go for sport and psychology, I believe. I think it's an absolutely fantastic institution for that kind of thing. Currently, he is a senior consultant and performance coach at Ground and Air, which is a coaching, development, and insight practice, which has a focus on human performance development and discusses such things and helps clients with such things as their physiology, their psychological aspect, rest and recovery, and things like that. He was previously head of performance at, I believe, was Roach Martin, an emotional intelligence training company. So, Joe, welcome to Leader Manager Coach.
Thank you, Rob. It's really good to be here. I've been looking forward to speaking to you today.
And is that all correct? All those things are correct, or have I got anything wrong?
Absolutely, that's bang on. All correct.
Good. Okay, so a lot of the listeners for Leader Manager Coach Joe have an interest in sport. They certainly have an interest in personal development and certainly human performance and that kind of thing and bettering themselves or leading teams. So I think you're probably full of knowledge that will really help people. Just tell us how your interest in getting into, your psychology, how that kind of was born, really. Is that something that was in you as an early age, or did it develop later on?
Yeah, so I was talking about this the other day, actually, on a workshop that I was running for a new client here at Ground and Air. And it started really when I was at school. My interest in psychology, I studied psychology probably around the age of 15, 16, I think it was. When I was at school, it was just general psychology at the time. There was no focus on sport or performance or clinical psychology at that time. And I got to the point where I was trying to figure out what next at that age, 16, 17. I was playing football. I was playing at a decent level, not professional or in the academy setups or anything, but I was a decent enough player at the time. And I remember sitting down with my dad, actually, at the time, and we were talking about what's next for you. Do you want to go to university? A lot of my friends were already talking about going to university to do things like law or politics or finance. Some of the classic things that you might hear, particularly at that time. And I was like, none of that really interests me that much. It doesn't sound like it's for me. And I remember my dad asking me, what are you interested in? What are you passionate about? And I said, sport, football. That's what I would love to do. But I know it's not always easy. I also got really quite interested in that psychology course I did at the time. So I kind of put them both together and I looked at sports psychology options. And Stirling came up, a few others down in England as well. And I ended up going for it. My dad was kind of saying to me at the time, if you don't give this a go, then you'll never know what could happen. And if it doesn't work out, then just you've got a long life ahead of you. So give something else a try. Give this a try, and if you need to, you can do something different. And I think then, even through my university times when I went to Stirling, I joined the football team, who were a pretty good team at the time. But what I realised was that it was often my, as I started to study psychology more and learn more about it, I realised that it was actually those aspects that were probably holding me back as a player. Maybe more so than my physical ability or my technical ability or tactical understanding. I thought it was probably more around that, around managing performance, anxiety and pressure in the bigger games. So I just followed that through and ended up studying sports psychology up there. As you said, I did my master's and moved down to London about 7 or 8 years ago to continue my career. So that brings me to where I am now, really.
Yeah, so it sounds, Joe, like it's a lovely story, and it sounds like, you know, you developed a self-insight, really. You kind of sat down and you had the benefit and the, you know, which a lot of people don't always have, and parents don't always kind of show that level of interest, or even if they do, they don't know how to verbalize it, or it's, you know, they just let you decide yourself and you kind of find your own way. But you kind of obviously had a courageous decision, or a courageous thought process, because a lot of people go into stuff, and you hear the stories, Joe, all the time, of people going into work that they hate, you know, they don't like it, they don't resonate with it, and they stay in it for a long time. And I can relate to that, as much as people would say I've done things in my work life that, you know, people would say, well, that's successful, you've done well at that. Yeah, okay. But I definitely relate to what you're saying. And I think it's a fantastic point to start with. Follow your heart, you know. Very difficult to do, but I think you're certainly a living example of that. And because what you think will open up, you know, the thing, there's some kind of quote that says, look, don't worry about the how, just know the why, you know, just know what it is you want, and the rest will kind of, the path will open up for you. So I wanted to come back to your work in a minute that you're doing, and maybe this will lead into myself, but I've noted in some of the things you've posted on social media or that you've written that emotional intelligence kind of stands out for me as something that that you have a deep understanding of and seem to have, you know, written a few things about, Joe. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but what does emotional intelligence mean to you in terms of a valuable facet to understand and be good at in life, sport, life, whatever?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's, I mentioned when I first moved to London 7 or 8 years ago now, and it was to start that role at Ross Martin, who are the emotional intelligence training and psychometrics company that I started with. And I first came across emotional intelligence at university during my studies, and I started to get really fascinated in it. I mentioned about, from my own point of view, it was that emotional experience sometimes that I struggled to keep on top of when I was playing as a footballer at my university team. And that's when it really sparked my interest, and I started to realise that you could work on managing these experiences and understanding them better, which is a big part of what emotional intelligence is. It's Daniel Goleman first coined the term or popularized the term over in the US back in the mid-90s when he wrote the book Why EQ is More Important Than IQ. And that was more in a business setting. But he described emotional intelligence as developing the ability to recognize, identify, and understand our own emotions and manage our own emotional experience, but also be able to understand and influence the emotional experience of other people. And I think that's for me is the best definition that exists of what it is. And what I realized when I moved to Ross Martin was that there was much more to it than that. There was a set of skills that sat underneath this idea of emotional intelligence, like self-awareness, for example, self-confidence, empathy, relationship skills, and you can actually do something about training and developing these. So it's a fascinating area, and it's an area I've worked in ever since moving down there to work at Ross Martin. I've applied it into, or I've helped train people in emotional intelligence and in business settings, particularly leaders, to help them lead teams and influence better and manage their own emotional state better. And I've worked into football environments as well, doing something similar with coaches and even players as well. So at Ross Martin, we had a couple of assessment tools we used to benchmark and measure emotional intelligence and then coach and train people to develop those skills. So we're doing a bit actually in esports now at the moment as well. And more recently, I got involved with two guys who did our training course at Ross Martin. Actually, one of them did our training course at Ross Martin a couple of years ago, and he wanted to create an app to make emotional intelligence skills and training available to young football players in particular. So we've started to do a bit more around that space. So certainly an area I've got a lot of interest in, Rob.
Okay. So let's just dive into that a little bit more, because here's a big question. Does it start with yourself? If you are not able to have a degree of mastery of at least insight, does that render you, in your opinion, incapable of then being efficient in helping another person or a team of people?
As a leader, do you mean?
So are we saying that you have to understand emotional intelligence and have a degree of insight and understanding of it yourself in order to influence other people, in your opinion? Do you think that?
Yes. My view is that we need a level of self-awareness into how we're behaving, how our behaviours impact other people in order to really influence. The research shows there's a direct relationship between self-knowing or self-awareness and then skills like empathy and relationship skills. So that sort of self element compared to the interpersonal competencies, which are also really important for influence, of course.
Okay, I want to come back to that in a minute. And how, well, this is like me asking you to be kind of very general, I suppose, which might go against the grain a little bit, but how good, how far down the road, and these are crazy questions really, because what's normal, but generally when you have your clients come to you, are they lower down the scale of degree of emotional intelligence than they think they are? And you think they are, and you think, oh my days, you know, there's so much to work on here. Or is it a mixed bag? How does that play out when you kind of get clients who come to you, some skeptical, some there because the boss has said they've got to go, and some people because they want to improve? Go on, give us a little insight into that.
Yeah, it's a great, great point and question, actually. I think it's a real mixed bag. There's times where you're approached by a client and they know that there's maybe some people in the team or one person in the team who's particularly lacking empathy, for example. So they want you to do a bit of coaching and a bit of development and training around that. And you start with the assessment tool to get the baseline or the benchmarking done at the start. And then you can really get an insight into how they perceive their own levels of empathy, but how other people perceive that as well, which is the most important thing. So you do the 360 assessment and then you coach and train around what comes out. But you also get teams or individuals who just want to learn a bit more about themselves and build their own self-awareness, which these assessment processes and coaching sessions are really good for. So it might just be, there's obviously that term marginal gains that's talked a lot about in sport and beyond. And it might just be tweaking something or adjusting their behaviour slightly to improve a skill like straightforwardness, which is one of the communication skills within the emotional intelligence model that I work from. So it's a bit of both, really, I would say. Like the kind of proactive approach to train and get a little bit better at some things, or there's a real gap and you really need to work on that to influence better or work better.
Do you get like teams of people who, or businesses or teams or groups or I know somebody who's the leader who says, listen, we've got this team and there's Phil and there's Megan and there's Amy and there's whoever, and they've got this problem, that problem, and can you sort them out? Do you get that kind of like attitude? And it's like, well, thinking, well, let's see how you get on first before we start trying to change other people. Yeah, does that happen? Or I don't know, maybe it does.
Yes, it has happened over time. And I think as a psychologist, you're always careful not to go straight in on that without doing your own needs analysis and understanding and assessment of what's really happening there so that you can obviously develop the most impactful and useful intervention for those people, you know.
No, it's great. It's fascinating. You must have some eureka moments with clients where they buy what they find out or self-discovery, and it makes a real difference in their work life or their success. I mean, have you got an, listen, obviously completely confidential, and just examples of where what you've done as a company, as an individual, has had exponential gains or real growth and real value. Joe, is there anything you could share that stands out as a nice story on that, as an example?
Yeah, I think there'll be a few really, but I think one that comes to mind for me was actually in the business world when I was doing a bit of work with a senior leader at Deutsche Bank, and it was back to this emotional intelligence piece where he was trying to understand why some of his team weren't opening up. It was just at the start of the pandemic, actually, this example, but he was trying to understand why his team weren't opening up to him and sharing concerns and discussing difficult topics and conversations with him in particular. And when we discussed that initially, and then we got him to take the ECR 360, which is the emotional intelligence assessment tool that I use, it became clear when we looked at that, and he'd got lots of feedback in from his colleagues and his peers and his manager and his direct reports, that it was the skills of empathy and relationship skills that he thought were higher in his perception than they actually were, and they were coming down quite low as development opportunities for him as a leader. So when we started to discuss that, I'd help him understand some of the tactics and strategies that he could start to deploy to develop those skills and exhibit more of those skills in his work. Then over the time, I think it was three months, we started that initial process quite intensive. And then over that time, he started to see things like his team opening up more in meetings and his team telling them what they did at the weekend a bit more often and talking about their families, and just that psychological safety, I think, was one of the key things that we saw grow within that particular team. And he saw some quite quick results off the back of that. So that gives a bit of an insight, I think, into an example of how that can work.
Yeah, and that fits in quite nicely. If you are interested in football, that a lot of the rhetoric at the minute and the in kind of vogue sexy manager is the Pep, obviously, the Jose type, the Eddie Howe type, who's the big brother, who's friendly, who's open, who talks about the family and lets you go home early to see the kids if they're ill, and the days of, look, without going to pigeonhole people here, but your Tony Pulis's, your Sam Allardyce's, the what people had pigeonholed incorrectly, but let's just kind of use that term to make it an example, that the old school is no longer sexy and doesn't get the results. And it kind of fits in with that rhetoric, really, Joe, what you're saying. And I'm not saying one's right and one's wrong. I'm sure there's a balance in everything. It seems to be what people want now.
I think it comes down to influence, doesn't it, when it comes to leadership and different, everyone's unique in that sense, how they influence people. But I do think with the generations of players and people that are involved in the workplace now, talk about Gen Z, and I don't like, a bit like you're saying, I'm not always keen to pigeonhole generations because not every one should be stereotyped in terms of what they respond well to. But I think, as you say, we've seen that evolve a bit over time in terms of what skills are used to influence. I think there's still a place for the loud voice and the directing people and advising and telling them what needs to be done differently and better. But I think, as you say, those softer skills, as they're called, are certainly more relevant or used nowadays.
And you know what, Joe, it's interesting to talk about this kind of thing, because I think it's real easy, and I do think that the world's gone this way, that the world considers that these soft skills, as you beautifully put it, the empathy, the understanding, the listening, you know, it's seen as like, what can I say? Let's find the word, weakness, or kind of, it's not strong. It's not, and it's almost like there's a lack of understanding that it's not a lack of strength. It doesn't mean you're weak. It doesn't mean you're not, you haven't got, you don't have, your values aren't there, and you allow people to walk over you. It's totally not that. And I think it's easy to get steamrolled into kind of thinking that, you know, you just let people do what they want. You kind of, you know, you're nice to them, and nice to them is like letting them do what they want.
Yes.
I think the whole, you know, being still involved in the workplace, that the whole kind of, you know, I suppose I'm going to get a little bit politically kind of involved here, but the woke thing and allowing people to be what they are at the time and not daring to kind of challenge, because challenge is considered to be, it's not fair to challenge people. You put them in awkward situations, and how they feel is the ultimate importance. And I think, Joe, we're in real danger of misunderstanding what the right balance is.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's absolutely spot on. There's been a lot of work done looking at resilience. I think we talked about resilience a bit last time, Rob, didn't we, when we had our first phone call?
Mm.
How do you develop resilience? And a big part of it is around the environment, but it's also individual qualities and leadership as well. And the research that's been done is showing that you need to get the right balance between challenge and support. It's striking that balance, exactly as you said there. But some people, I think that balance isn't always an easy thing to get right. It's not, but you're absolutely right. It's getting that balance. You need to challenge. You can't have everything too nicey, and obviously fun's important and enjoyment, but you do need to keep people on their toes, I think, as a leader, as a coach, as well as support them, listen, as you say, understand, let them be with their sick grandmother if she's not very well, all that kind of stuff, but the human side of it.
It's that balance, yeah, absolutely. So just I'm interested to know about esports, only because I know nothing about it, and I can understand, and it's probably my own ignorance here, I'm just being honest and saying I know nothing about it, I can understand needing resilience to play a game of football when you're absolutely shattered and it's 10 minutes to go and you feel like you're spent, or you're an athlete and you've got another lap to go and you think, do you know what, where am I going to find this energy from? And you're under pressure, and if you don't win, you know, there's a financial cost and your career, you know, changes at the drop of a hat. And I get that. How does your role in sports psychology play out in terms of esports? Where do you have a valuable input into that? And how do people come to you and say, can you help me?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting one. You know, I've been involved in esports now for about 18 months, I would say, in total. So it's the newer element of my career in sports psychology and performance, really. But a lot of what you described there is actually still quite relevant, is what I've found.
Right.
So resilience, managing pressure, all these types of things. There's obviously quite nuanced quite big differences, of course, with the esports players being mainly sedentary or sitting a lot of the time, spending a lot of hours in dark rooms playing games, essentially. but we at Ground and Air, we started working with Red Bull Formula One esports team. Basically, and they're joined up now with the Formula One team. It's part of Red Bull, so obviously you've got Max Verstappen, Checo Perez there, Christian Horner's the boss, and the esports team now sits in that same organisation. So it was fascinating getting to understand how they work together and how they worked alongside the other guys there, the traditional team, if you like. But when we went in there at the start, it was actually about a year ago when we started with them, things like communication were important and needed work. So communication in the team between drivers, other things like emotional control, so managing performance anxiety, which obviously is as part of any performance setting was another thing. Just developing team spirit, team cohesion, togetherness was something that was quite new to them. They were just young guys who were who became really good at a game, basically a Formula One racing game, and they've been put into this team environment in the last 3-4 years and expected to be a team and win championships. So a lot of those things you would work with a football team or a cricket team or a even a business team, if you like, came up similarly. Just the nuanced differences. Burnout was a big thing because these kids have been playing for a long, long time. They start when they're very young now playing these games, and then they get to a point they're so good at it that a team like Red Bull comes in and offers them a contract as a professional player, and it's quite a change. And then all of a sudden, pressure to perform, pressure to win money, to keep the team going, becomes a part of it, and they can burn out because they've been doing it for so long. A bit like young academy players, maybe in football, when it gets more serious. So that's important to educate people around that and help them manage that side of things. So,
are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com. Leader Manager Coach.
Having thought about it, it's in football they talk about the four corner model, the physical and the social, you know, the psychological, the technical and the tactical. So, and obviously the physical corner in esports is a different issue. It's like it's still there, but you don't think it is, but it is, because if you sit down for 12 hours a day and you look at a screen and you do that for years on end, the consequences if you don't make some concerted effort to actually develop other, you know, it could seriously end your life, you know, or shorten it, yeah, because it's known surely that, you know, sedentary lifestyles and looking at screens all the time, all the evidence is that, you know, it's not positive to do that all the time, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. And that's a big challenge, I think, that industry's faced with. But teams that are now putting quite a lot of money behind their athletes, as they call them, are starting to do more around gym sessions, personal training, strength conditioning even. And it's not even so much to get them really physically fit so that they can run for a long time, because that's not necessarily needed for the sport. But you'll know, Rob, yourself, that going out for a run or even a walk for 20 minutes is really beneficial for your cognitive performance as well. It wakens up your brain basically and makes your reaction times quicker and get more oxygen in there. So as long as you can make that link and show how it can help them from a game point of view, a bit like working in football, I think as well. Yeah. This stuff's only lands and only people only listen to it if they think it's going to help them perform better. So I think that link's necessary.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm really interested to know a little bit more about your current role and at Ground and Air, and maybe you can touch on any similarities, if it's appropriate, of course, at Roche Martin. But so tell us a little bit about what services you offer. You've kind of, obviously in a previous conversation, I've got a little bit of an insight, but for the listeners, what kind of things you offer and services you offer and how you help your clients through your current role, Joe?
Sure, yes. So we describe ourselves as a performance and well-being company. So we help human beings, teams and organisations perform better and maintain a good sense of well-being while doing so. We focus in three key areas, really, in terms of what we actually do. So performance coaching for both individuals and teams. Development. So again, that can be developing individuals and developing teams, so helping them train them around skill development and helping them be better at what they do. And then the third piece is around insights, as we call it. So that's basically using a suite of insight tools, awareness tools to inform our work, both with teams and individuals, to help people understand more about themselves, to help teams understand more about how they operate together. So some of our insights tools, I've mentioned one of them already, Emotional Capital Report, ECR 360, which is the Emotional Intelligence Assessment Tool. We use a tool called VoicePrint, which helps with communication and impact and influence. So we work with a lot of leaders and high potentials and business settings, particularly with that tool. And others like personality, more traditional personality type tools as well. So that's gives you a bit of a flavour, Rob. In terms of the industries we work in, so we work quite a lot in business and corporate settings, as I've mentioned to you before, in media and tech. So companies like Forbes, Google, Microsoft, Washington Post, CNN, kind of in the media and tech space, and then into retail with companies like Holland and Barrett, and then into esports, obviously, as we've talked a bit about, with Red Bull Esports, Guild more recently, who yeah. David Beckham's the joint shareholder of, or majority shareholder of, sorry. And then in sport as well, traditional sport, as I've started to call it, because of the work in esports. So, yeah, doing some work with LMA, actually, I think, who you've done some work with in the past as well. So, yeah, it's a real variation and range.
Yeah, so if I can see you've dealt with, as a company, grounding you know, relationships with, blimey, some proper established blue-chip companies and organisations there, and, you know, that's amazing in terms of a company's CV. So are you an appropriate organisation if there's an individual out there who is looking to progress their career and wants to develop themselves? Is that something that you offer services to as well as your corporate clients with teams of people?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We can, ultimately for me, it's, and my colleagues here, it's about human functioning and human performance. So if someone out there is really interested to develop themselves, enhance their career, develop some skills, like, for example, emotional intelligence or communication, or even how to get into flow more often, flow state, these are the kind of things we do as well. So it's not just limited to big companies yeah. and things like that.
So, for example, something like your ECR 360, is that tool that you or Stroke Ground and Air have developed, is that a gold standard that's available, that's been known throughout the psychology world for a long time, or is that unique to you and Ground and Air, Joe, something like that?
Yeah, so it's actually I would say it's, for me, it's the best emotional intelligence assessment tool out there that measures the relationship between emotional intelligence and leadership performance. And it wasn't developed by us, no. It was developed by Roche Martin, who were the company I used to work for, by Martin Newman and Judy Purse, who are their founders there at Roche Martin. They're psychologists. They developed that over many years in different business settings and sport. And lots of research was done into building that into the tool it is now. So that's the one I continue to use.
So you think that's a powerful tool? You, by the sound of it, you've mentioned it three or four times, and obviously you've used it extensively. You think that's a real powerful tool to help people to develop leadership skills? Is that yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, yeah. And I think a lot of our clients and clients in my previous role would say the same. It takes a lot. It takes something like emotional intelligence and makes it very practical, and you can very much apply the behaviors and tactics to your job straight away after doing it. It's kind of transformational in terms of the process you go through. It's quite quick, giving you quite a lot of insight into yourself and how you're perceived by other people. So yeah,
interesting. And VoicePrint, I'm interested in the power of influence and communication and voice. Maybe if I could ask you a little bit about VoicePrint, what's a little bit more detail about that and how that works and how that can help leaders?
Sure, yes. This is one of my newer tools that I've started to use in the last sort of 18 months. And I hadn't seen anything like it before. It's a competency-based tool. There's come across a lot of personality assessments in my time as I was doing my training. But it was developed by a guy called Alan Robertson, who's a Scottish guy, actually, like myself. And has been used in big companies like Boeing and Coca-Cola and others. He developed that over 15 years ago now. And it basically, as I say, it's quite simple in the sense that it measures your communication style. There's a self-assessment tool, so you take it yourself. So Rob, for example, if you wanted to take that, you would do your questionnaire. It takes about 15 minutes to complete. And then you can get a self-report, which talks you through your results and gives you insights into how you can improve. And then there's a 360 version as well, so how you're being heard by others, essentially, in terms of your communication. And then again, you get your report and you can get a feedback session with a trained coach. And then there's also a team report as well that you can do as a team, and you can think about and discuss how your team is communicating. And there's, in terms of what it's measuring what they call the 9 modes of talk or 9 voices.
Wow.
And the top three, it's like a shape like a triangle, and the top three are what's called the exploring voices, so questioning voices like probing, for example, or inquiring, or diagnosing. So a doctor might go and see the doctor, for example, and they'll ask you multiple questions, and then they'll diagnose the issue, for example. So there's that diagnosed voice. And to the bottom corner, which is the what are called the positioning voices, so advising, articulating, those types of voices, so where you're making a point, for example, or you're advocating for something. And then into the final corner of the triangle, the final three voices are what they call controlling voices, so to challenge, the voice to challenge, where you might challenge someone in a meeting or in a conversation. To evaluate, so you weigh up something. So let's say you're going out, you're sitting with your wife, let's say on a Friday night, and you're trying to decide where you want to go for dinner. You might say I quite fancy Chinese tonight, or I quite fancy Italian. And your wife might say, actually fancy going for a burger or fish and chips tonight. And then you kind of evaluate the options. Well, that one's a bit further away, it's raining, maybe we need to take the car. So there's that kind of evaluation that goes on. So there's quite a bit of substance to these voices, but that's the 9 of them anyway. There's 9 of them in that model, and you assess them, and then you can help develop them as part of the process. Yeah,
wow. Here's one for you. Matt, put you on the spot here, Joe. I said I wouldn't put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Reading, is that something you enjoy? Is it something you will obviously have done a ton of reading to get your master's and to get all through your education? So, you know, you don't get to where you've got without reading. Is reading something that you're passionate about yourself, or have you got anything that you often use with clients and recommend? Have you got anything along that score? Because I'm a big fan of the written word, and I think, you know, it's, I don't know, I think, gosh, the value you can get out of a book can just it blows your mind sometimes, things that you read and you think, wow, you know, that's, if I hadn't read that, what, you know, where would it be, kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think reading is, I love reading myself. I did a lot of it, as you say, through the studies. So you get to a point a little bit where you want to change up the medium of learning as well. So I've got a lot into podcasts. Obviously, you're on doing your podcast today, Rob, and audiobooks as well. But reading is, I think, it doesn't only educate you, but it helps you in your own work as well when it comes to making patterns between things and helping to understand other people. So I think it's crucial, and we should all try and do it as much as possible. In terms of things I've been reading, I guess as a psychologist, I've been getting quite interested recently in what's called ACT, which is a therapeutic approach, basically, to helping people change behavior. And it's a good book called by a guy called Russ Harris, just really getting into that and the tools and tactics people can use to manage uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. And so there's I'm particularly interested in that. I'm also really interested in developing togetherness as a team. So done quite a lot of reading around Matt Slater's work, a guy called Matt Slater, who's one of the foremost figures now in the UK on developing team togetherness. How to Build a Winning Team is his book. And it's a real nice, yeah, clear process. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, I just love that kind of thing. I think there's a... Mike, carry on. Yeah.
No, not at all. I think I was... I brought you in, to be fair, anyway. But it's... I think that's been a really practical read as well. I'm big on practical reads as much as possible. Theory's good, but it needs to be practical and applicable, doesn't it? So that's very clear. It's like a roadmap for developing togetherness within the team. There's three stages to it: reflect, represent, realise, and there's various activities you can do within each of those. The other thing, longevity, I've been really interested in recently as well. Longevity in terms of how we age as human beings and how we can keep stay closer to our best for longer. A guy called Peter Attia.
How do you spell the surname?
Attia.
Longevity, okay.
Longevity, it's the science of longevity, and again, very practical around health and well-being. So that's some of the stuff I've been interested in of late.
Yeah, good. And plenty of roads to travel down, Joe, in the future with all that kind of bubbling around and, you know, where you're at now, mate. Crikey. You're a lot younger than me, and working with young people. Been fortunate to work, very, very fortunate to work with elderly people and people who at end of life. I've worked in an aspect of my life, you know, I feel fortunate. I've not just worked in sport. I've worked with people who are at the end of their life, and it's a privilege to be with people who know that this is the end for them, or their earthly life. There's something about it that you can't talk about or explain. But the contrast to that is working with young people with energy and enthusiasm and kind of the whole excitement of life ahead of them, you know. And it's almost on a different level when you're working with like 12 and 13 year olds who have almost got that naive kind of, oh my days, you know, every day I'll be like this for the rest of my life, you know. And then people like you who still, you know, young and kind of enthusiastic and stuff. I think there's a lot to be said for enthusiasm, which kind of fits in nicely. You're talking about Attia's work of longevity, you know, because I also know people who are in the 50s and 60s who act like they're 32, you know, physically. They look good and they're out there coaching, and it's great. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, all wonderful stuff. Look, Joe, I appreciate you've got a hard point because you've got stuff to get on with. I've kind of like you all the four or five things I wanted. It's been great. We've talked about emotional intelligence. We've talked about your journey. We've talked about teams and team togetherness. We've talked about empathy, and we've delved a little bit into detail about your favorite tools, voice print, and 360, ECR 360. Blimey, anybody just listen to this for a few minutes, we'll be able to follow one of those rabbit holes, I'm absolutely sure. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that I haven't asked you? I just ask the questions that kind of influence me, so I indulge myself, really. So excuse me for that, and I hope it helps others. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to kind of share that I haven't kind of pulled out of you in this short interview?
I think it's been great, Rob. I really enjoyed it talking to you about some of these things I'm particularly interested in. I guess one thing I mentioned just briefly at the start that it might be of interest to you and your readers at some point, not readers, sorry, listeners, at some point down the line. I've got a real interest and passion in both football, youth development, and also emotional intelligence. And I mentioned about that app that we've started to create over the last little while, really. And we're we're launching that really to help young players and coaches as well to develop some of these skills I talked about today: self-awareness, empathy, self-control, manage your emotions better, in order to improve performance and well-being. So we're launching that soon as well. So what the app's called Head Coach. So I just thought it might be worth mentioning if anyone's interested in that, who's listening into your podcast, they could check that out as well, because that might be quite relevant for them down the track.
Will it be available on, you know, the normal that people go to, whether they're on Android or whatever? They can just get that through that, yeah?
From October, yes, start of October.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow,
so that'll be through there, which has been a good fun project for me. As I say, it's the area I'm really passionate in as well. So, yeah, just thought I would mention that. But
I can
talk to anyone who's particularly interested in that area of EQ, or I say EQ, that's the abbreviated term for emotional intelligence, for those that haven't heard that before. But I could chat all day about it, as you can maybe tell. So if anyone is interested in chatting more, I'd love to do that as well.
Brilliant. So if anybody does want to get in touch with you, Joe, or to find out more about how you can help them and, work-wise, professional-wise, individually, obviously I can put your contact details in the show notes. What's the best way? You're on LinkedIn. I know you're on LinkedIn, yeah? So they can catch you on LinkedIn, Joe, yeah?
Yeah, that's the social channel I tend to be most active on, definitely. LinkedIn and my email address as well.
What's your email address, Joe?
It's joedavis@groundandair.co.uk.
So it's joedavis at groundandair. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
What did you say?
.co.uk.
.co.uk. I'll put that in the show notes as well. So that's your email address and LinkedIn. I'm sure people can catch you on that. Joe, it's been amazing. I'm keen that I don't keep people longer than I promise. So, really happy with all the stuff I've kind of asked you about, and listen, we could go down all these different aspects and talk about all of them individually and develop them further, but maybe we'll be able to do that in the future. But it's been great, and I really thank you for your time, and keep up the good work, pal, because you're doing some good stuff.
Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the chat. I'll definitely be up for doing it again one day. Thank you.